It had been a long, hard year running the store. A lot of anxiety about introducing new lines. But the Patels had got it right. They had more than justified Uncle Javed's hopes for them. It was up and running now, their own place in the middle of city offices. A place where they had the courage to stock much more than the usual sandwiches and fast food for office lunches. They had even opened a gift section with small electronics, little leather goods and gadgets of every kind. The other shopkeepers had shaken their heads and said they were mad. But the Patels were newly married and fired with ideas, gently encouraged by the watchful Uncle Javed. The young couple had a gut feeling about the kind of service city workers needed, and now, as they finally prepared to close for the Christmas holidays, the Patels stood and watched proudly as their most successful venture, trolleys overflowing with carefully packed goods, waited in line to be collected. These were goods that had been bought at lunch hour or during the day, when customers had been able to slip away from their offices. Each trolley had a name written on it with a big felt pen on cardboard. The customers showed the receipt and then pushed the trolley out of the door. There was a chorus of greetings and good wishes, and the Patels watched as 100 different Christmases left their shop in trolleys. Uncle Javed congratulated them, remarking that there were many new faces among the regular customers. Mr. Patel was talking to one of the regulars when Uncle Javed gave the trolley marked S. White to a young, anxious-looking woman with long hair falling into her eyes. Mrs. Patel was outside in the cold, giving directions, when Uncle Javed gave another trolley marked S. White to a stooped man with sad eyes. Then the Patels closed their store and took the first proper rest they had known for over a year. Sarah White pushed the trolley to the van, where Ken waited patiently. There was someone like Ken in every office, a man who didn't drink, who didn't seem to have any real life of his own, not that he talked about anyway, but who was always there ready to help. It had become a tradition that Ken drove people home after the Christmas Eve office party. He piled all the carrier bags into the back of the van and returned the trolley to the little line. His three other passengers were still singing cheerfully as he dropped each of them to their homes, and they seemed reluctant to leave. Only Sarah was sober and silent as she sat beside him in the front seat.
"You must have bought the whole shop,"
Ken said to her. "Well, it's going to be a difficult Christmas this year. I want to make it different for them, not too traditional and all that," Sarah said, and looked out of the window at the crowds making their way home in the rain. Sarah's husband had left home in the springtime, quite unexpectedly, apparently. She had spoken little of it in the office, but some of the girls had told Ken that she cried a lot and always expected that he would phone and say he was coming back. "I'm going to make them Thai curry tomorrow. They're like that, and it won't be sort of reminding them, you know?"
"I know," Ken said, even though he didn't. He helped her into the house with the carrier bags. Last year, there'd been a tall, thin man in a red sweater called David opening the door and taking the bags for her. He had invited Ken in to have a drink. This time, two children opened the door.
"You're very late," the girl said disapprovingly.
"I suppose it was all stupid games and things at the party," the boy said.
"You remember Ken?" Her voice was bright, too bright.
"Yeah,"
said the girl.
"Hi,"
said the boy.
Ken said, "Good night," sharpish. "No, thanks, he didn't want to come in. He wished everyone a very happy Christmas."
"Well now," Sarah said.
"Well," said Adam, who was 13 and had come to the end of a bad day.
All his friends seemed to be having proper Christmases, with presents and relations and trees and parties. Adam didn't know what he would do if his mother said once more in that false sort of accent she spoke with sometimes that it was just a day. That's all Christmas was when you come to think of it. Just a day.
"Well," said Katie, who was 12 and missed her father with a dull sort of ache that never went away. Things would never be all right again. When they saw their dad, he just sighed and groaned and cast his eyes up to heaven about their mother.
Her mother couldn't speak of Dad without shaking and trembling and talking about that woman and all the trouble she had caused. Adam and Katie didn't talk about Dad at all. It was easier. But nothing is easy at Christmas time. They watched as their mother's false smile tried to reach her eyes and didn't succeed. "Well," she said again, "let's see what we've got here." And very slowly, she began to unpack onto her kitchen table the entire Christmas shopping list of a Mr. Stephen White. His credit card receipt was in one of the bags. A man who liked wrapped white sliced bread, and tins of peas, and two portions of frozen turkey breast. A man who had bought 10 tins of cat food, and 4 horrible, horrible little packages of talcum powder and soap, with Merry Yuletide written on them. Unbelieving still, Sarah opened bag after bag. Everything she hated most in the world was unfolding before her. Packet stuffing for a turkey. Could this man have intended to put some dry packet stuffing in a frozen breast of turkey? There were tins of made-up custard. There were convenience foods like she had never known. Things you boiled in a bag and stewed in a packet of sauce. Sarah's eyes were round in horror. Her face began to crumple. And for the first time since their father had left, the children saw that their mother was about to cry. Adam and Katie looked at each other in amazement. She had never cried when Dad had walked away and gone off to live with that strange Mrs. Hunter, the woman with the greasy hair and the long droopy cardigan. And here she was now about to collapse because of something to do with the shopping. Sarah fought back the tears. She could not let herself go now, now of all nights. But it was 8 o'clock on Christmas Eve. Some half-witted man called Stephen White in some other part of the city had the beautiful soft leather handbag she had bought for Katie, the little CD player with 10 carefully chosen discs that she had found for Adam, the pure silk scarf that would go with Katie's green eyes, the camera that Adam had always wanted. This man, who ate white bread and frozen turkey breasts, would have all the lemongrass and black olives, fresh limes and coriander. He would have the fresh prawns, the designer salad ingredients, the superb cheese. Even if there were any other stores open now, which she doubted, Sarah couldn't afford to buy anything else. She had spent half a month's salary in Patel's. And they, with their happy marriage and successful business, had managed to ruin everything for her. Because of their incompetence, she was going to have to serve this man's revolting food for Christmas, or they would eat nothing at all. She didn't deserve to be let down like this. She had worked so very hard and fought so very bitterly to have the children to herself this Christmas. She didn't want them going anywhere near David and that appalling Marjorie Hunter, who looked as if she'd never washed her face or combed her hair. David said it wouldn't be Christmas for him if he couldn't see the children, at least for a little bit of the day. He had offered all kinds of things. He could collect them. He could visit them for an hour. He could send a taxi for them. He would be lonely, he said. "You should have thought of that when you left them," Sarah had said crisply. "Please, Sarah." He had actually begged her. "How could you possibly be lonely, David?" Sarah had said. "You have the lovely Marjorie Hunter to entertain you." And he had hung up then, defeated. She saw both the children staring at her, worried. "Do you want us to put the shopping away?" Katie asked. "I'll open the freezer," Adam offered. "This isn't the shopping," Sarah sobbed, her shoulders heaving. "This isn't anyone's normal shopping. It's the shopping of a madman." And with her head between the tins of cat food and the packets of instant whipped mousse, Sarah White wept all the tears that the children had never seen her shed in this, the worst year of their lives. They were entirely at a loss. For month after long month it had been a brittle, tense way of coping with Dad leaving. Katie had tried to talk. She had sat on her mother's bed and begged her to tell her what had happened. But she had got no answer. Only that strange, unnatural laugh that didn't sound at all like her mother. Adam had wondered, was it because he had got a bad school report? Could that have had anything to do with it? But again, that laugh. He wasn't to be so silly to think that a bad report could make a father leave home. They couldn't understand why she had never cried. The children could not understand that their mother was tormented with her own desperate questions, and the person with the answers had simply walked away. Katie and Adam hardly dared to touch the weeping woman with her head down on the table in the middle of this perfectly ordinary-looking shopping. But, tentatively, Katie touched her mother's shoulder. Adam went and got a great lump of kitchen paper for her to dry her eyes. Gradually, Sarah sat up and looked at them. She blew her nose loudly and gave each of her children a squeeze. "It's just the last straw, you see," she explained. They didn't see. "I wanted it to be special for you," she said humbly. They huddled together and talked. She told them how much she loved them and how hard she had fought for them this Christmas. And now there were only terrible, terrible things to cook, and all their lovely presents gone forever to this madman.
"I don't mind these things," said Katie. "You don't have to cook with them. We'll do it."
Katie waited for her mother to protest. But Sarah took one glance at the alien food on her table and sighed heavily. Adam held his breath and followed his mother's gaze. At least she had stopped crying.
"This stuff's easy to cook," he boasted, "and we'll find the madman after Christmas and get our presents back."
His mother touched his cheek. The small gesture surprised Adam and he felt happy. For the first time in months, he and his sister did not seem like some impossible burden their mother had to suffer alone. Warily, Sarah watched her son and daughter play with the garish items that had been bought by Mr. S. White. The tins and packets were being tossed carelessly between Adam and Katie, their faces getting increasingly excited as they invented elaborate names for the dishes on their Christmas Day menu. A meal of sorts seemed possible, Sarah conceded. She looked at her children, both ridiculously pleased with themselves, and she felt blessed. They deserved their presents, and she knew. She had always known what they really wanted for Christmas. "Would you like to call your dad?" she asked gently. The children looked at her. Their shoulders sagged slightly and they avoided her eyes. "You can invite him to your lunch," she added softly.
"Only if he brings some food in our presents," said Katie too brightly.
"Don't be silly. He wouldn't come without her."
Adam tried to hide his frustration, but recently their lives had become so complicated.
"Daddy could bring her," said Katie hesitantly.
A furtive look passed between Katie and Adam. They hardly dared to hope. Sarah studied the shopping of Mr. S. White with open suspicion.
"Do you really think you could manage this lot?"
Two eager faces beamed back at her.
"Easy," said Adam confidently. Katie nodded her agreement.
Sarah sighed. Her children were right, she thought. It was easy. And she went to the telephone.
"I will have to warn Daddy and Marjorie," she said,
and smiled at the two impish faces, "that it will be a light and very uncomplicated lunch."
The White Trolley by Maeve Binchy was read by Jenny Agutter. The producers were Owen O'Callaghan, Heather Brennan, Pam Fraser-Solomon and Sarah Johnson.